Good morning, everyone. It is 10:01, November 26, 2024. This is an informal hearing on XL Energy case number PU-24-342. This is an application to amend a previous order regarding the addition of thermal generation in or near the Red River Valley of North Dakota. In a moment, we'll go around and have everybody ID themselves on the record with their attendance. I want to emphasize this is an informal hearing, so we're dealing only in undisputed information. If things come up that are under dispute, we would have to suspend this and schedule a formal hearing on that. I don't really have any opening comments other than that. Commissioner Fedorchak, did you? So I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Haugenhoffert, for opening comments, and then just lead us into the case, including having everyone identify themselves.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Crispin. I think this case has a lot of history to it, and I look forward to going through some of the history on the initial settlement, how that came, and then with that settlement agreement, how it leads us to here today, and what the next steps are. So I look forward to going through some of that history, how we got here. With that being said, we turn it over to the company, but I would like you guys to introduce yourself for the record, who's in the room along with PSC staff.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
And Christopher Shaw with Excel.
Alex Nesbitt, I'm a regulatory policy specialist with Excel Energy out of Fargo.
Justin Holstein, Manager, Gas Resource Planning with Excel.
Okay, I'll turn it over to you, Alex, to go through your PowerPoint.
Perfect, thank you. This is the second act in today's three-act play. On the agenda, I'll be providing the first handful of slides. The intent of it is to provide a little bit of background on the thermal generation background and the amendments that we're going to be seeking. And then for the second and third phases, I'll be kicking over to Mr. Shaw on my left-hand side to talk about the recent RFPs that we filed in North Dakota the IRPs as well as the RFP that just concluded and where we're looking in the future. And then to the right of me, Mr. Holstein, he'll be speaking to pipeline development generally and also the potential in North Dakota. And I'll also point out that we have a few individuals in the room as well from XL Energy and other parties that at any point in time we can have them come up. I want it to be a valuable discussion today, and you've alluded to the history as well. We have other people that, can come up at any point in time. And I would just stress that throughout this that I have slides set, but as always, if you have any questions at any time throughout this, don't hesitate to stop, and we'll just discuss them, because what we're really trying to do is set a groundwork for, obviously, what's included in this application that we're speaking to today, which is really just asking for additional time. There's been a lot of movement going on over the last handful of years, and especially the last couple of weeks and months. There was a federal election on November 5th, and there will likely be some moving pieces associated with that, and we're very interested to see and excited to see where what the future holds as far as energy development, specifically in North Dakota and the nation as a whole. So it's something that we're going to be following closely. And also we have an upcoming legislative session where I'm assuming that one of the items that we'll be discussing today will be discussed during that legislative session. So the amendments specifically that we're seeking, and it's on the second to last slide if you want to look at it, we can get to it eventually, but what we're looking to do is extend the specific date that we had listed and instead replace that with semi-annual reporting requirements to the commission. Six-ish months, depending on timing, but in discussion with staff, it just seemed like that would be preferable as compared to setting a specific date, and it's our understanding over the next several months, handful of years, we'll have a lot more information and be able to provide just a lot more context around this. And that's really why we're here today, is because, as I alluded to, there's just going to be a lot of moving pieces, and it's exciting, and it's something that with what we proposed, and I'll get to it a little bit more as far as what we proposed, but due to the natural gas issues that we're having just as far as capacity on the eastern side of the state, what we're going to be discussing today, it potentially could make it more competitive from a cost standpoint. And the other thing that we just also be alluding to on this first slide is that at any point in time, if the commission decides that they would like to take remedial action, then we would seek to have a hearing and then deal with it at that point in time. That remedial action could take the form of various projects from a reliability standpoint or what would have you. And that's another thing that I'll just stress throughout today's discussion, is that the proposed language that I put on the second to last slide, that's not set in stone. It's similar to the ADP revision hearing that we had earlier this year, where we're proposing a draft amended settlement agreement. If there's parts you like, parts you don't like, we can talk about it at that juncture. But realistically, what we're here to do today is just talk about what we've been working on, kind of where we're standing right now as far as the development of this generation resource in eastern North Dakota, and how the potential players in the state could help potentially make a pipeline from west to east more feasible, and then also potentially make this project more competitive as well. Going to the third slide, this is specifically what we're going to be talking about. So the fourth slide, this is the actual commitment that's coming out of the 2016 order, and you alluded to the history aspect of this. This came from the longstanding interest of the commission to ensure that we have reliable service for North Dakota customers, and also the long-term agreement that their local reliability and system benefits in locating thermal generation within near our North Dakota service territory. That specific language that you see there, it's, as I alluded to, by the end of 2025, the company will have built or located in eastern North Dakota a natural gas-fired electric generation facility with a capacity of at least 200 megawatts. There are two conditions on that as well. It must address the system capacity need, and also it must represent a least cost resource when also considering the local reliability and system benefits of developing it in eastern North Dakota. On this page, we talk about the potential, the penalty associated with it if we did not get it constructed by the deadline set. I've been thinking about this project for a long time, and it's one of those things that you can look at it a lot of different ways, but I personally think that the ability to continue to have that incentive for the company to look at this very seriously, continue to work with people like the gentleman situated far to the left of me, and be able to look at something like this that has lots of benefits for the state as a whole. It's something that it seems very valuable to everybody, and that's just kind of, it's a really good way of looking at this, and that's really kind of what we're asking for, is just the overall extension to continue to work on this, try to flesh this out. Overall, as you see towards the bottom of the page, we start talking about what we've been working on to try to satisfy this requirement that was set in that prior order. Earlier this year, we submitted in the Bison CT generation proposal. The Bison project, it's located right adjacent to our Bison substation, which is about 5 miles north of Mapleton in eastern North Dakota. And it's situated strategically from a substation standpoint, and also it's on the end of the CapEx 2020 line. So from a transmission substation standpoint, it's a very advantageous position. And also, just from a system benefit, just the proximity to Fargo, it's helpful as well. What you'll see, though, is it's the first proposed gas plant in the area, which means that it's going to potentially bear the cost for necessary gas system upgrades to provide adequate supply. And that's one of the main driving factors as to why, when we did bid this in, it was deemed to not be economically competitive, primarily due to the significant costs associated with the natural gas system upgrades.
Alex, there.
Yep.
Before you go too far on the Bison one, can you, the agreement was, went into, or was negotiated and finalized in 2016. How many IRPs have you done between that time and now?
Sure, I can take that one. So we had an IRP in 2015 and 2016,
mm-hmm.
and the next one was filed in 2019, and now this current one we just filed
okay.
in 2024. So there's, I guess, two.
So why wasn't this part of the 2019? Or where, because I remember talking with Greg Chamberlain about the company's efforts to, you had to redo the Black Start program for the company because of Minnesota requirements, and part of that involved having kind of different gas-powered units situated outside of Minnesota because you couldn't build them there. And that was, many years ago that was happening. So, I mean, I get that you've filed this now in 2024, but that's 8 years. 8 years have gone by since this was settled in, this agreement. I'm just curious what you all have been doing or what other iterations of meeting this commitment occurred in the last 8 years.
Sure. So it was included in the 2019 resource plan. We had two CTs included in that plan. Ultimately,
in North Dakota.
Yes, yeah, so one of them was in North Dakota. One of those two.
Do you want to pull your mic closer?
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah,
that's fine.
There you go.
That proceeding took, I don't remember, a long time, 2 or 3 years, until we got an order coming out of that. And then that order set up this firm dispatchable, this 800 megawatts of firm dispatchable capacity acquisition that then we initiated, I guess that's just last fall. So it just ended up being a really extended regulatory process to get to an actual acquisition for these type of resources.
And so the capacity needs have been met with, have you added additional generation, dispatchable generation in the last 8 years elsewhere?
We have extended a couple existing contracts for a few years to make sure we had sufficient capacity, but that's all. That's the only firm dispatchable capacity that's been added since a 2012 acquisition process.
Okay. All right, that's helpful. Thank you.
And that largely covers the extent of my comments. The next slide is the location of the Bison CT, the proposed site of the Bison CT, just for a little context as far as the location to Fargo, which is one of our larger service territories for the state.
Let me ask you a question on that map. As far as the the transmission line interconnection, I don't know what kind of capacity is there, but you're only a few miles apart, although one is usually referenced as being by Mapleton and one by Castleton. But does that Harmony Solar project interconnecting to the transmission line does that make a difference in what's available for capacity on that line for this facility, or is there plenty of availability for both, or what?
Sure. So my understanding from our transmission folks is there's good transmission access at this site, so there's plenty of transmission interconnection available for this resource.
Even if Harmony Solar is built.
Right.
So this whole pipeline and gas availability issue, does the company see locations in other parts of the footprint where you could have available gas to use?
We've had internal discussions, and I think you were around for part of it, and that's also alluding to the history lesson associated with this. In the application, we talk about the Red River Valley 1 and 2 project, which was located in Hankinson. With that project, we had substation concerns, transmission issues, and also we still even had natural gas issues at that location as well, leading up to this RFP process and the development of the Bison CT. We looked at 12-ish locations for this. As always, if things change, we could always put it in a different spot, but with our substation there, the location approximately to Fargo, this was where we decided to put it, and we bid it in and ended up not being competitive, but if it was in and nothing else beat it, then it would have been built potentially at that location.
So help me understand, what is competitive as far as, what is more competitive as far as thermal generation?
What other project was successful in this?
Where can you get it, build it?
I think we can go the next
slide. Yeah, we'll just get in. Yep, thanks.
So this is kind of picking up on your last question, Commissioner Fedorchak. This is overview of this firm dispatchable competitive acquisition proceeding that is really still ongoing in Minnesota. This was coming out of our 2019 resource plan initiated last fall. So we solicited bids from third parties as well into this proceeding. The bids that the company submitted were the Bison CT, the Lyon County CT is a new combustion turbine in southwest Minnesota, and then a storage proposal at the Sherco site.
How many megawatts is that storage?
300 megawatts, I believe.
Battery storage.
4-hour storage, right. We got third-party bids from both Mankato Energy Center, which is an existing combined cycle facility, and the Cannon Falls combustion turbine facility to extend those PPAs. So those were submitted into the proceeding for evaluation. Kind of in conjunction with this, we then submitted a resource plan in this past spring, affirming the need for more of these type of resources in this time frame. And so we're as part of that proceeding then evaluating, the bids that were put into the proceeding. We're moving forward in the settlement with three of them, so with the Lyon County and with the extensions of the PPAs, both the Mankato and Cannon Falls CTs. The Bison wasn't selected. It was the highest cost one, and it's really those gas costs that were driving those higher costs. I mean, otherwise, it's, similar CT costs.
How many megawatts is the Lyon County?
They're both above 400 megawatts.
Okay. Yeah, and that one has, is that already existing?
No, that's a new CT.
But there's a pipeline there with capacity?
There's a pipeline there, right.
Do you know what kind of capacity it has? Is it firm?
For Lyon County, the pipeline that is nearby is market gas, so we won't hold capacity on the line. We are just going to buy gas direct from the pipeline for the plant.
Would you be able to get a firm contract if you needed it?
No.
Okay.
Not forward haul. The pipeline is full, mostly with Bakken gas going to market.
I mean, I love that it's Bakken gas, but at some point you might need firm.
our view is that all of the gas, mostly all of the gas in the pipeline, is headed to markets at Ventura or Chicago, and is available for sale, not held by like LDC parties taking it to direct to customers.
And could that change? Like, what's stopping that from changing? If
I suppose it could change, but that would be a monumental shift in the market dynamics and mm-hmm. how the gas industry is operating right now.
Okay. Okay, so the Sherco storage, 300 megawatts, was more competitive than the Bison?
It was selected. Well, I think really it's these other three CTs that are kind of filling that need that a CT would likely fill. The storage has a shorter duration, obviously. So it's, yeah.
And was there any cost of carbon applied to this analysis?
There was, yeah. So in the we're required to do that as part of the evaluations in Minnesota. So that is part of it. This analysis, though, and this acquisition is really focusing on the ability of a resource portfolio selected to, meet our requirements sort of every hour of the year. So it was a very kind of specific, granular look at will this resource portfolio be able to be dispatched to make sure that we have resources that, are in our portfolio to meet our needs. So I think that was really the bigger driver of the selections here. If we would have not cared about that criteria, for example, we wouldn't even have gotten these CTs selected.
So, but ultimately it came down to the lowest cost
to meet those needs. Right, correct.
I'm still unsure how the battery fit in that. The battery was just not really for capacity or?
Not really for firm dispatchable capacity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And Mankato is 400 megawatts too.
It's 375 maybe.
And tell me a little bit about the gas supply for Mankato.
We hold firm transportation capacity to supply Mankato and have for over a decade at least.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. And we can move to the next slide. We do anticipate needing additional firm dispatchable resources beyond those three in the future. Our resource plan modeling supports additions in 2030 and beyond. I think we talked about the potential for data center loads and other large loads coming on the system, which could drive additional needs or move those needs sooner. And of course, investment in gas infrastructure will be needed to be able to bring these resources online.
See, one more question about Mankato. When did you first start enter into the PPA with Mankato? Or start, I think you owned it for a while, didn't you, and then sold it? So when did that whole relationship first initiate?
So there are two phases. We kind of have two separate PPAs. The second one came out of a 2012 acquisition. So I'm trying to remember when that came online. Like 2018 or 19 was the second phase. There already was an existing Mankato 1 PPA that we had. And so that's actually that PPA, that extension that got bid into this proceeding. I don't know exactly when that started, but it was maybe mid-2000s, 05 or 06, somewhere like that.
I think it was around that time, though. It's one of the resources that we fought about over the years.
Yep. Yes,
if I'm remembering that's true. Correctly, I don't think you're recovering Mankato Energy Center from North
we're
Dakota.
Not recovering, we're not recovering the capacity costs. It's that the first or the second? It's the second.
Just the second
phase.
Yeah. You may want to just go to the table, Sam. You're going to have some words to say.
Probably did all these, right?
Yeah, so this is me. So just looking at specifically the Bison project and pipeline development for there, so we would... Eastern North Dakota is a generally constrained area as far as available pipeline capacity. So to build the new CT, we would need an expansion. Generally, there's two suppliers in the area, one mostly located in Minnesota and one in North Dakota. Obviously, we would prefer to utilize a North Dakota option. That would be a large project. It requires, you know, a significant amount of time to put that together. just as an example, you know, we did a much smaller or worked on a much smaller project in the upper Midwest that took 18 months just from discussions to open season, just as a reference. So we're looking at potentially a project from west to east. Probably about a 300-mile project. We would guess that it's about $800 million in capital just to build the pipeline. Using our rough, you know, cost of service estimate for pipelines, that's about $160 million in annual payments to whoever, you know, were to build that pipe. And so that would take not just us, but multiple shippers, multiple end-use customers to make that economic for all parties involved. The last couple bullets there, a project like this, it takes time, it takes a lot of aligning every customer's potential start dates together, making sure everybody's willing to make a commitment at the same time for a project to be delivered at the same time. I guess the point is just that it takes quite a bit of time to put these together and execute them.
When did you guys start in full kind of negotiating with North Dakota, like with Justin and others in the state on this pipeline prospect?
It depends on the iteration of the project that we're talking about. A west-to-east pipeline has been a hot topic of discussion for several years. Mm-hmm. It's having the load at one end or the other to anchor it, to make it go.
Mm-hmm. But I don't recall the exact date of when the states first initiated some sort of incentives to build that pipe, but it's been a couple sessions ago. Yeah. Do you remember, Randy?
Well, I think it just really got going in the 21 session, but I think Mr. Kringstad could help. We don't usually take outside testimony, right. But it was the 21 session when things really kicked off on that?
Correct, Commissioner. The special session that took place with the COVID, post-COVID events really started that with $150 million grant program. In the 23 session, there were additional efforts. The grant program was removed, and it moved towards a capacity program through the Pipeline Authority and the Industrial Commission. So $60 million per biennium to take capacity on a pipeline project, along with other parties that would also serve as anchor shippers on a natural gas pipeline system moving eastward. So it would be the state of North Dakota and additional parties, and it would take, as correctly stated, multiple parties to come together to get a volume sufficient enough to make a commercial project move forward.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe just hang on to that in case we need to again.
You could just come up to the table, too.
You're welcome to join us.
Did the company start having any conversations in 2021 with that $150 million grant program?
We were involved in quite a few conversations with different parties, different projects that for the $150 million. In each of those, I think we would have been a customer, not a pipeline provider. Mm-hmm.
How much has Minnesota's policy over the last, number of years to have you guys backing away from fossil investments impacted your delay in pursuing this?
I think it's hard to say. It's a challenge to get. It's obviously a challenge in Minnesota to get affirmative go aheads on gas. I think it's fair to say that that's part of the reason. The process there took a long time. Other reasons too. We had a combined cycle proposed at one point at Sherco site that was pretty controversial in Minnesota. But I do think, we have to get through a lot of process to be able to move forward with gas.
That combined cycle also needed pipeline at Sherco, right?
Right.
And where have you settled on your black start plans? Are you managing those without much in terms of gas, or how are you dealing with that longer term?
So we are moving forward with two different projects to maintain our sort of existing black start plans, which I'm reluctant to say. I know we tried to keep a lot of this like trade secret, but sort of there is in like actually the last resource plan some discussion about investments that we were making to kind of solidify existing black start plans. I think we'd also talked about in that previous resource plan expanding into this zonal approach. I think long term that's still something we're want to move forward with and want to move to, kind of near term, we're reinforcing some of these existing plans.
So the zonal approach would include a resource like in North Dakota?
I believe so. I mean, it's different zones across our service territory. Could it be on the other side of the road? I don't know exactly where those zones are, but sure. Yeah, it would be a more diverse set of resources.
So if your revenue requirement, is the estimated annual revenue requirement $160 million total for this new pipeline?
That's...
Or just for you guys?
Just ballpark, that's what we think a new pipeline that spent $800 million in capital would need to make it worth their time.
And the state would cover a third of that, more than a third. It was $60 million, right? $60
million? Third, I believe the state's portion is $30 million a year.
Oh, that's
60. Yes, correct.
Okay.
And I think the state would be hoping that they don't actually pay any of that, but shippers take it on a short-term basis or longer-term from the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is going to be an incredible need for gas. I mean, as much as we want to depend on other things, that technology isn't there yet. So you guys are thinking that you just need more time to pursue this and bring this pipeline into fruition, be part of the players that help make that happen.
there's a lot of moving pieces right now with all the parties that are involved. We have an upcoming legislative session in North Dakota starting in a little over a month now. We have the national conversation, and then as Chris alluded to, with the data center load, it's just it's continuing to bear that out and meeting those two prongs as far as this requirement, the cost, and then the need for it. We're constantly looking at that and analyzing that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you guys, I appreciate you providing some of the testimony from past events in your filing, including the stuff from Mike Diller. Be fun if he was here.
I love the Diller testimony. It was exactly. Really good.
I did too.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting on his comments is that he says, you know, the extension that he was advocating for would allow plenty of time for NSB to plan, and you know, that's kind of what he was saying back in 2013. And using that as, you know, reason to advocate for, you know, pushing this. So it's kind of hard to say, like, oh, let's do more time. Like, how do we know that's going to get this resolved?
That's a really good remark. And just to clarify, when he was saying that, that was still for a 20-year outlook. So that was the 2036 right. Commitment. Obviously, we accelerated that. But his overall sentiment is still the same as far as being able to find the right time, the right place.
Yeah.
With the IRPs. But your point is very well taken.
And then when it was accelerated, though, there was that was the company's give, and then we gave two by paying for some resources that we didn't like and that were really expensive. So that was our customer's give in that negotiation to lead us to the 2025 date.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's where I have the draft proposed language up there. If at any point in time during these biennial reports, the updates that we're providing on pipeline advancements in the state, as well as our development of a project like the Bison CT, if it becomes evident that it's not going in the right direction, the commission, through hearing, can take remedial action.
And so, you know, if you're here saying, well, it's just not going to be done by the end of 2025. We need this extended until, you know, August of 2026 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd look at that pretty generously. But after this much time has gone by, to now go to the commitment to do a biannual report, that just suggests to me an opening thing that this thing is coming. It will be in the future, and it will always be in the future. It will never really happen. It will just be reports. And I just, without something much more specific than biannual reports, I'm not really seeing this ever developing.
One thing I would just point to in your comment is very, very well taken. And I think that the seriousness of it and the interest in the parties, and that's the having this out there is very valuable. This commitment, having that out there is very valuable to the commission. It's valuable to the state, to the ratepayers, to potentially have this project built. That's always going to be out there, outstanding. And that's these 6 months. At any point in time, you can seek remedial action. And I would point just when it was contemplated, the second bullet point up there, the hollow one, there is generally the understanding that this is without qualification, provided that the company could always petition the commission for an extension or modification if necessary. And you alluded to Mr. Diller's comments. there was definitely the understanding that a couple decades out, this industry is constantly evolving, and it just takes that long sometimes. And obviously, we got the benefit of the accelerated timeline, and there's the financial penalty associated with that. But that's not going anywhere. There's the remedial action that you could seek at any point in time, and we'd be open for discussions in the future as far as what that might look like, or even now. But yeah, and this is just draft language that we've put up there that we're absolutely open to having any discussions about what that process could potentially look like. But it's just, there's a lot of moving pieces, and as Justin alluded to, it takes time, but the landscape right now, it's going in the right direction, it seems like.
But without anything specific to push, so if the legislature started with some kind of an incentive in 2021 and then upped it in 2023, and now real early on in this informal, you mentioned that the legislature is coming in here very quickly. Mm-hmm. As long as they keep upping the ante, why would the company ever commit to something? As soon as this session's over, it's only 2 years till the next one. They might up it again if we wait. And so what I don't know what other than a firm deadline really incentivizes action.
That's a really good point. And obviously these projects all take a long, even if we're built out, approved, just between the timeline of pipelines and then putting it into an RFP, the development, we're still out into the 2030s. And the North Dakota legislature, that discussion is very important, but obviously we have the external factors as well as far as the need when we would have to have it on it in our system. Chris alluded to the data centers and whatnot. So that would be a major driver factor that obviously if the discussion around dollar amounts continues to go on, but I think that internally we'd have our own process that would be driving a resource addition of this type.
I think too the state's incentives are not to the company, but would provide the support of additional shippers that would make a west to east project more economic and more competitive for the company's eventual participation in that project, if that makes sense.
I understand, yeah. But the more they commit to it, the less your contract should cost.
In theory, yes.
So I think what I hear Randy saying and is sort of a similar concern I have is it would be one thing if there was a project that Minnesota had approved, that you guys were committed to, and that was happening. We're not there. We're not even close to that. You guys are still debating whether this is going to be something you're going to do. And the Minnesota Commission hasn't taken action on it, or maybe they have. Maybe they've said forget it. So, we're not really much further along than we were in 2016, as far as I can see. And that's, in this day and age, with the demand that we're seeing, we should be racing to get this done as fast as possible.
And that's, I absolutely agree with your sentiment, but I think the last thing that you point there, that's kind of what always brings me back to extending this so we continue to look at it, because there is the demand that continues to grow. We developed this project, proposed this project, and if it were competitive, it would have been built.
So you've got the second bullet there. Thermal generation commitment should be viewed as a positive means of incentivizing rather than a sort of a punitive, right?
Correct.
I don't know that we're at the point where incentives are enough. mean, it's been out there as an incentive for a long time, and we haven't really gotten anywhere. There's state incentives that, you know, sweeten the pot even more. Mm-hmm. That hasn't gotten us anywhere.
Yeah.
You're pursuing gas contracts, et cetera, in Minnesota. You know, you could have weighed the North Dakota option heavier based on this commitment back in the day when you're looking at those things. So, I mean, I'm just sitting here going, how do we make this real? Like, what are the tools we have to make this real? We have an incredible resource in the state with people who are open to having it. And you guys are going to need it. You need it now, and you're going to need it even more, especially if you pursue additional demand, you know, high demand projects.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And I just, the incentivizing and the seriousness, the amount of time, energy, and thought we put internally at the company around this, and the people that are here in the room today, Tony Grinberg here as well, as far as looking at the legislative session, having Justin here, having all these other folks there, that is the incentive as well on the front end, is the fact that we're constantly looking at this, thinking about it, and in discussions with Vic as far as, I mean, a year is too long, 6 months, we're not going to go very far. We're not kicking the can down the road. We didn't, in the initial discussions with staff on this, we didn't want to kick the can down the road, having some sort of set deadline. Everybody, I know I work to a deadline, but that's where having these constant updates provides constant movement and a discourse and a dialogue between staff, commission, and us on this point. And it keeps it front and center with the company as well. And there will be RFPs again in the near future around this issue. And so to continue to have it be something that's looked at is very valuable.
So a previous answer that Christopher gave to a question from one of my fellow commissioners, I don't remember who, regarding the Sherco storage and whether carbon elimination or whether that was factored into that bidding process, and it was affirmed that it was, was the cost of paying this penalty if Bison CT is not selected in that process, was that factored into the modeling?
Well, no. So that cost wasn't specifically considered or specifically included in the modeling. It's not a customer cost. It could be a company cost that we would incur. So, yeah, it wasn't included in the cost benefit analysis.
Victor, have you guys explored any other options besides this?
Nothing specific at this point. I think just the history is kind of that important lesson for this one. I think the original provision was created from the 12813 rate case, which I think was settled in the 2013, maybe early 2014 timeframe. And, you know, the provision is tied to the terminology we used, but it was essentially the excess costs from biomass units. And I know both the commission and staff had a significant concern with the biomass units that were paid for by NSB and its customers at the direction of Minnesota. So it's kind of more of what we've come to see is from the company of Minnesota is driving the things and North Dakota is along for the ride. But we got to pay our bus fare. even though it's an electric bus. So I guess it's that history is an important piece, I guess, you know. So I don't is that a trade secret number, the penalty amount as it's currently estimated? Yeah, okay. It is a lesser amount than it was originally estimated at by nearly half, I think. And it's only nearly half because the PPAs for those biomass were such a terrible deal that even the company came and proposed, hey, how about we go and knock all those things down instead of keep paying on them? Which says a lot that a utility company is going to choose to come and say, hey, let's do this really weird thing. And really expensive thing. That was a lot of money. And again, those things were all driven by Minnesota and its desires. This requirement was driven by North Dakota and its desires. And I realize it does take time. But to the point that I think we're hearing, we're no closer today to a North Dakota unit than we were in 2014. Doesn't feel like it anyway. I see you kind of shifting.
I don't know if you know. I certainly see why it feels that way. To me, a west to east pipeline has never felt like a closer possibility than it does right now. I mean, we've heard proposals. We've talked about a pipeline like this for as long as I've been at the company. It kind of feels like we might be able to reach it now. So that feels different than it has in the past. But, I take your point on the larger picture.
Sure.
Can you give me, I guess I'm not following you. I hear you. I understand your statement. But give me two things why you feel you're closer. I mean, you've had communications and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's just, I can't put anything concrete to it. So. Give me some.
Well, yeah, and it's maybe it's just a fuzzy feeling on my side, but I mean, we did talk about this in association with the power plant just 2 years ago, and it was so non-commercial that it didn't merit a long discussion, and just the addition of money and the addition of potential other customers, it feels a lot more tangible. Other parties may have shown up, I guess, is the major difference.
Other parties may what? Have shown up?
I'm not privy to that information. Customers? Other customers of a potential pipeline might also be interested.
Maybe the state should just own the dang thing, just like the mill and... and make a ton of money on it because there's going to be so much demand for gas that probably be a good, smart new investment.
Commissioner, and to kind of follow up on Commissioner Haugenhoffert's question, and how close are we to a pipeline? And again, this is front and center of my day-to-day work. It will take a stack of parties to get a project all the way from western North Dakota to eastern North Dakota. Power generation is a large piece of that stack, and without power generation in that stack, it becomes closer to the infeasible component unless the state of North Dakota steps up with incremental state incentives in replacement of that power generation. So a project, and I know timelines were discussed with the FERC process, the 7C, you're likely looking at a four-year window from decision. I mean, just for talking points, from a decision to move forward, starting the regulatory process, construction, a four-year window is a fair timeline to consider.
Is there anything in your IRPs from Minnesota that would prevent this?
There's nothing that would like prohibit any mm-hmm. additional. There's not. Okay. The settlement I guess approves those, or the settlement that hasn't gone to the commission yet, I guess I should say that. So that's a settlement between parties, and the commission will hear that next year. So I guess I shouldn't speak for what might what come out happen. Of that. But yeah, the settlement doesn't
prohibit you building more gas.
Right.
Does the company have any internal policies or goals or anything as far as using fossil fuels, as far as carbon emissions, as far as anything like that, that construction of your own gas plant would conflict with?
So the company does have carbon reduction goals. The goals are basically 80% from 2005 levels by 2030, and then, ultimately carbon-free by 2050. What we said about the 2050 goal is it's aspirational. We don't have, with current technologies, you can't get there. And so there would need to be sort of further technological development to actually get to 100%. So I don't think, potentially CTs could be converted to some sort of fuel in the future. I think we don't know exactly what that looks like that far out in advance. And so, right now, and with kind of this from dispatchable proceeding, the CTs are filling an important need and are sort of part of our plans.
And therein lies my concern. I feel like the company is willing to voluntarily set a goal, but then acknowledge that it can't probably be reached, and so then declare behind the scenes that it's just an aspirational goal. And so it leaves me wondering, are your agreements on things like this really planned to be fulfilled, or are they just aspirational things that we'll deal with when we can't meet them later?
Specifically to this commitment, I think there was always, and I wasn't there, but it would be the intent to meet this commitment, and that's where having something tied to it. I know looking at the 2014 commitment, there wasn't as much of a dollar amount or anything like that associated with it, but this just, it's an additional driver to push forward. Therein lies the value of the extension, and continue to just keep this alive. If Al wants to speak to it. Yeah.
Thank you. I'll just reintroduce. I'm Al Krug with XL Energy. I thought I'd jump in, not have Alex take all of the questions. But I totally understand. Certainly, this has been a commitment that has not been met as yet, and I certainly understand there would be some concern about kicking the can. When we worked on this particular commitment, we kind of viewed it as giving you the opportunity to take control over this, meaning at any time you could say, we don't see this going forward. I see that isn't necessarily meeting the need here, and we certainly would be willing to work on firming up the commitment in some other way that would make this a little more real. I think our main goal here was, as Justin has indicated, we're kind of hitting a critical point in time here on gas development, which we're all excited about. That has taken, certainly acknowledge it's taken a long time. We would like some additional time. We don't know how long that would be, but if there is a better way to firm up the commitment so that our interests stay aligned, we're certainly willing to look at that. I think we haven't worked with staff in detail on that. We certainly could go back and try to propose a commitment that made more sense, that felt a little more real.
I'd definitely be interested in that, having some teeth in this. You know, there's a dollar amount out there that's already in, you know, in an agreement. Maybe that dollar amount is committed to this purpose. Or, you know, something of that nature. So it becomes more real that this is going to happen. The company's committed to it and there's money engaged to that end.
That's a good thought. I think we'll just have to take that back and think about it a little bit, but certainly we want to make something work where we stay aligned on, mm-hmm. on future development. Yeah.
And the other thing I'd just like to throw out, and I had not thought of it before, so maybe in an hour from now I'll be regretting saying it. I think that it wasn't a good idea, but, you know, so that amount, if we just said, nope, we're not changing anything, my recollection is it wasn't a declared number. It was based on a formula, kind of. Mm-hmm. And so that changed some with the elimination of those other generators. And it reduced the
that's true.
Potential penalty.
Yes.
But maybe at this point, because like I say, there's almost an when government agencies are getting involved and trying to incentivize something, there's almost an incentive for developers to keep waiting, because let them keep upping the ante that they're going to pay. And so maybe if some new language is incorporated, it ought to have an escalating in penalty if nothing ever happens, so that there is some skin in the game to try to move more quickly rather than trying to delay further down the road. So that, just one thing I want to throw out is a possibility that ultimate failure of the whole concept winds up being an escalating penalty rather than just a set one.
Well, we appreciate the input. We're very interested in making something work.
You mean an escalating incentive?
I mean, it's an incentive to do it, yes. Yeah, but you always have a nicer way of saying things than I do. Anything else? And as a guest, this is not the norm. Justin, did you want to add anything else? Again, though, I know this isn't your normal involvement in our informal hearings, but this is an informal, so it's kind of more non-conflicting things, but just information that you, with your expertise, think always as us and staff and the company contemplate this.
Thank you, Chairman Chrisman. So for those, Justin Kringstad, Director of the North Dakota Pipeline Authority. So I do appreciate being brought up to the table here. I have been actively for the last year working with Xcel on a project, and it's one of the parties to a larger scale system looking to move Bakken gas eastward to interconnect with other pipeline systems as well as power generation out in eastern North Dakota. The timeline is moving quickly from a production standpoint in North Dakota. We're looking out at the 2028 and beyond timeframe where natural gas constraints would likely start restricting activity levels in North Dakota, causing oil production to potentially move downward, impacting tax revenue. So timing is critical. So this, moving forward, we will need natural gas solutions, or the resulting scenario will be reduced activity and reduced economic development for the region and the state from a tax revenue basis. So timing is very, very critical for us in this endeavor.
Thank you. Tony?
Tony Grinberg, State Manager of Xcel. Just to piggyback on Justin's comments, you know, that messaging has been front and center with us in our planning, and also looking at being a partner in this with North Dakota to help with the, you know, overall production of the Bakken and being part of the solution. So just to reinforce, we've been in discussions and conversations for primarily all this year that I've been actively involved with. So.
Appreciate that. Anything else we have to wrap up? So are there any objections to the evidence presented today becoming part of the record upon which a decision will be made? And by the evidence, I'm referring to the handout as well as the recording of the meeting.
No objections.
No objection from staff.
Okay, then the evidence presented will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Is there anything else anyone wants to add for the record? Seeing none, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you, everyone.